we can circle the wagons and get ready to do this. I know that we're at the tail end of summer here. Everybody's running around doing crazy stuff and everything, so it'll all come back to normal here within a few weeks, but we have a very fun, and it scares people when they first read it, but for me, I think it's a little more fun and interesting, but it's definitely worth discussing, Genesis 27, so that's the focal point of tonight, and it's got one central, like, question involved, so it shouldn't take us too long, but let's pray. Heavenly Father, we welcome you into this place. Thank you so much for this evening and this time together. Bless everyone here as they travel to and fro, and open up our hearts and our minds and touch us with your word. Give us insight and enlightenment into what you're saying and what we can do with it. And as always, please bless us and help us and protect us as we study your mighty, mighty word. We love you so much. Be welcome in this place and have your way with this meeting. Bless it. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen. This is one of my favorite sections because the question is so big, but I think there might be some answers. We'll figure it out because this one is funny. So, Genesis 27. Now it came to pass when Isaac was old and his eyes were so dim that he could not see, that he called Esau, his older son, and said to him, "My son." Now the reason that's separated like that is because it's a reflection of when we had Abraham, and Abraham had Isaac and Ishmael, and Ishmael was running around, but he called Isaac his son, and they said, "Your son who you love, Isaac," and things like that, and they separated that discussion. What Isaac plans to do is separate Esau and honor him and have him be his, heir because he's the older son. Now this is fascinating because Isaac is a very godly person. He's a great patriarch and we've studied him for quite a few chapters. But I think he's missing something. And let's just figure out if that might be the case. So Esau answers him, "Here I am." And he said, "Behold, now I am old. I do not know the day of my death. Now, therefore, please take your weapons, your quiver and your bow, and go out the field and hunt game for me, and make me savory food such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, that my soul may bless you before I die." Now, this is there's been a couple times that there's been reference to him as this hunter and this food, and how Isaac loves him because of that, which is a fascinating thing to me. Isaac isn't talking about loving his son because of his godliness, right? Or his closeness to the Lord, or his intelligence, or his ability to, lead people, or anything like that. This also bears a resemblance to a much older story concerning Nimrod. And I'm not trying to say that there's anything bad about hunting or whatever, but there seems to be this connection here where that's the concern. It might be that because Isaac was so blessed and had a relatively easy life, and if you study it, it's not this long, complicated, dangerous life like Abraham had. And it's definitely not anything like Joseph has coming up. It was much more of a relaxed, laid-back. In fact, if you took the four patriarchs in Genesis, you'd have to say, and if you added in, let's say, other ones like Noah and Adam, you would have to say that Isaac was probably had the easiest life of all of them. Abraham had a bunch of struggles. Joseph certainly will. Jacob will. Obviously, Noah built an ark and had a world flood, So there's all these issues that are large, that are dangerous, that everyone's dealing with. But it seems to me and I could be wrong, but it seems to me that Isaac hasn't had to deal with those things. He inherits all the great things that Abraham does. He continues them and then gets blessed again. As we saw in the last class, people are scared of him. They come and give him blessings and make pacts with him and covenants with him so no one can harm each other, like Abimelech, right? So he's in a very safe zone. He's highly blessed. He's very wealthy. We know that his wife was, you know, just this amazing woman that he loved and that was so beautiful and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it doesn't seem like he's doing a whole lot of struggling or suffering. Now, if that's the case, and it might not be, because we might have subtext here. Nothing's easy at this period of time in this part of the world. I mean, but if that's true, then he may be worried about things he shouldn't be worried about, and missing things he should be worried about, and most importantly, he might be too worldly. This could be a representation of worldliness. Now, it might not. You could read it as honoring his father, going out hunting and honoring his father, right? But Esau's the guy that gave away his birthright originally, remember, for some stew. I think if you're going to die and your last request is get me some like venison stew, and your son you're asking that to sold his birthright for stew, then we're getting a pretty clear indication that these are two peas in a pod. And it's not necessarily a godly pod. It's not necessarily the right pod. I think that Isaac liked this idea of hunting and eating, and I think that Esau loved this idea of hunting and eating. And I think that he probably got these wives. Remember how they're annoying to Rebekah and everything? I think he probably got these wives based on that, like, hunter, manly, you know, go far away, meet him in a distant village kind of a thing. I'm not mad at that idea, but when you're talking about the entire future of the world, and you're talking about, you know, children like the stars, and kingdoms, and blessing all the world, the stew and the hunting thing is weird to me. It indicates to me that these guys aren't really paying a whole lot of attention. And we definitely know that Esau's not paying attention. He has sold his birthright for stew, and he's went and got random wives. He's not paying attention at all, like to any of this. I think that maybe Isaac identifies with Esau and loves him. Maybe he's his firstborn son. Maybe he thinks he's cooler than Jacob. You know, likes him a little bit better. You know, sometimes people do that. They like somebody for some reason. They hit it off in some way. But that's not the deal. That's not going to be what needs to happen for the future. Now, and God knows that. Does anyone else know that? Let's find out. Now, Rebekah was listening when Isaac spoke to Esau's son, and Esau went to the field to hunt game and bring it. So Rebekah spoke to Jacob, her son. Now look at how they phrase that. Isaac spoke to Esau, his son, and Rebekah spoke to Jacob, her son. Come on. And unfortunately, that happens. Like, one of the parents identifies with one of the kids, and the other ones are all right, you know. And the other parent identifies with another one of the kids, and the other ones are all right. And, you know. She says, "Indeed, I heard your father speak to Esau, your brother, saying, 'Bring me game and make savory food for me, that I may eat it and bless you in the presence of the Lord before my death. Now, therefore, my son, obey my voice according to what I command you. Go now to the flock, bring me from there two choice kids of the goats, and I will make savory food from them for your father, such as he loves. Then you shall take it to your father, he may eat it, he'll bless you before his death.'" So Rebekah's got a master plan. This is brilliant. And she chooses something properly. As a chef, she's picking goats, which are going to be the most gamey. They're going to be the closest thing to the game that Esau would bring back. Pretty slick. Couldn't pick sheep or cows. It wouldn't work the same. We'll figure out, and it could be as simple as this. Everybody in this story could just be selfish. It's true. Isaac could be selfish because he likes Esau. Esau could be selfish because he wants to inherit all that stuff. Rebecca could be selfish because she just likes Jacob better. Jacob could be selfish because he wants that stuff. Everybody could be selfish. But what do we know about God?
I seem to remember that God spoke to Rebecca before she had the children, saying that the second was going to be over the first.
So Rebecca can also be following God. And also, we know that God uses bad things for good. So he could just work everybody. If they were all four just selfish, that's okay. He could just work it out. God could put the right person in power for later using their selfishness, right? Using a bad thing to make a good thing. But let's see what happens. So Jacob says to Rebekah, his mother, "Look, Esau, my brother, is a hairy man, and I'm a smooth-skinned man." I love this. So Jacob is thinking about this. He's like, well, you know, I'm a smooth-skinned guy, which is bizarre. And Esau's hairy. My father will fail me and shall seem to be a deceiver to him, and I'll bring a curse on myself, not a blessing. But his mother said to him, "Let your curse be on me, my son. Only obey my voice. Go get them for me." He went and got them, brought them to his mother. She made savory food such as the father loved. Now this is awesome, of course, because Rebecca's going to know exactly the favorite dish, the exact way to spice it, exactly what her husband loves. So she takes the choice clothes of her elder son, Esau, which were in their house, put them on Jacob. Then she puts the skin, that's why she says, just go get the goats. Because she's got a plan for the goat's skin, too. Esau must be a rough dude, by the way. If you can just throw some skin, goat skin on you, and it'll be like, Esau, he must be a rough dude. She puts it on his hand and the smooth part of his neck, the goat skins, okay? She gives him savory food and bread, and then gives it into the hand of his son, Jacob. So he went into his father and says, "My father." And he said, "Here I am. Who are you? My son?" And that's, once again, another sign. He says, "My son," meaning Esau, right? And Jacob straight up lies. "I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done just as you have told me. Please arise, sit, and eat of my game, that your soul may bless me." But Isaac said to his son, "How is it you found it so quickly?" Right? Because it takes a while to hunt. And he says, "Because the Lord your God brought it to me." So he's even using God's name in vain, basically, right? Isaac said to Jacob, "Please come near me that I may feel you, my son, to see whether you're really my son." So Isaac's not stupid. He's got a bad feeling about this, that this might not be Esau, right? So Jacob went near to Isaac, and he felt him and said, "The voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau." And he did not recognize him because his hands were hairy like his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him. He must have been really hairy and rough hair too, because, you know. Then he said, "Are you really my son Esau?" And he said, "I am." He said, "Bring it near me and I will eat of my son's game so that my soul may bless you." So he brought it near him and he ate. And he brought him wine and he drank. And his father Isaac said to him, "Come kneel down and kiss my son." He came near and kissed him. And he smelled the smell of his clothing. Remember, that's the clothing that she dressed him in. And blessed him and said, "Surely the smell of my son is like the smell of a field which the Lord has blessed. Therefore may God give you of the dew of heaven, of the fatness of the earth, and the plenty of the grain and wine. Let people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be master over your brethren, and let your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be those who bless you." So now Isaac has fallen for this and given him the full blessing. And we had to talk about that because now it happened. As soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, and Jacob had scarcely gone out of the presence of Isaac, that Esau came in from hunting. He also had made savory food and brought it to his father. Is that a different kitchen?
I don't know. This is
by the way, how much stuff do these people have? He's on the other side of the encampment at the other kitchen making the stew. Anyway.
He had to clean his...
Had to clean the game, too, so... Yeah, so now let my father rise and eat of his son's game. He said, who are you? And he said, I am your son, your firstborn Esau. And then Isaac trembled exceedingly and said, who? Where is the one who hunted game and brought it to me? I ate all of it before you came. I have blessed him, and indeed he shall be blessed. When Esau heard the words of his father, he cried with an exceedingly great and bitter cry. So Isaac trembled exceedingly, and Esau cried with exceedingly great and bitter cry, said to his father, bless me also, O my father. But he said, your brother came with deceit and has taken away your blessing. What is going on? Why can't Jacob, since he's praying a blessing, simply bless him too, or say, all right, Lord, that first one was done deceitfully. I take that one back. Bless this one. Why is it so dramatic? And why is it so specific? And why can't he take it back? That has always been my big question from this section. Why doesn't Jacob, Jacob got the blessing, so Isaac blessed Jacob by accident, doesn't want to bless him. Why doesn't he just say, psych? Jacob's not blessed. Esau's blessed. Bless Esau, Lord. And when referring to God, Jacob had referred to it as your God to Isaac. It's almost like God, and I know this isn't necessarily the case theologically, but it's almost like God's in one place at one time. You know what I mean? Like he had walked around with Abraham specifically. They had gone into Sodom specifically, right? Then he's talking to one person, specifically. Now we know that's not true because other people have dreams and talk to God and other people hear from God and stuff like that. But it seems as though, maybe Esau and Jacob haven't really dealt with God, that just Isaac has. But why, if Isaac's dealing with God, why can't he go, oops, So, and he recognizes what's happened. Esau says, is he not rightly named Jacob? For he has supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and now look, he's taken away my blessing. He said, have you not reserved a blessing for me? Then Isaac answered and said to Esau, indeed, I have made him your master, and all his brethren I have given him as servants, and grain and wine I have sustained him. What shall I do now for you, my son? And Esau said to his father, have you only one blessing, my father? Bless me also, my father. Esau lifted up his voice and wept. Then Isaac, his father, answered and said to him, behold, your dwelling shall be of the fatness of the earth and the dew of heaven from above. By your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother. And it shall come to pass when you become reckless that you shall break his yoke from your neck. I suppose that's his attempt at a blessing. Okay. For me, this is a crazy story that is amazing and really deserving of analysis, of a close look, of discussion. We'll finish the last little section and then we'll talk about it. Because the last little section, Esau, let's see how he reacts. Well, Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, the days of mourning for my father are at hand, and then I will kill my brother Jacob. Okay? And then the words of Esau, her older son, were told to Rebekah. So she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, "Surely your brother Esau comforts himself concerning you by intending to kill you. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice. Arise, flee to my brother Laban in Haran. Stay with him a few days until your brother's fury turns away, until your brother's anger turns away from you and he forgets what you've done to him. Then I will send and bring you from there. Why should I be bereaved also of you both in one day?" And Rebekah said to Isaac, "I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth. If Jacob takes a wife of the daughters of Heth like those who are the daughters of the land, what good will my life be to me?" And she's setting that up so that Jacob has a reason to leave. Right? So, Rebekah's very smart and wily. She's, not only does she have a desire to protect Jacob, but she has a way, a reason, and a sort of a tactical plan. First of all, she's gonna send him back to where they're from. You know, remember how Abraham sent the servant, you know, with the camels, you know, to go get a wife for Isaac, and that's where Rebekah's from, right? So she's gonna send Jacob there to hide out, so Esau doesn't kill him after Isaac dies. Well, the discussion is about how things are done, and we can get to that in a second. But what's really happening? And in reality, every single thing that needs to happen is happening exactly like it needs to happen. In other words, Jacob has to have, you know, if he's going to have a wife, he's going to have to go back and keep the line together just like Rebekah, just like Isaac did. There's this bad thing happening where he's got a threat on him from Esau, but that's being used to get him back there. Everything is exactly as it should be. He's the one who is going to be the father of Israel. He's going to be the one. And he might be a shady kid, but he's going to be one of the greatest of all the patriarchs. To me, rather than being such a weird like story of doing bad stuff, to me, it's a story of the ultimate sovereignty of God under all circumstances. No matter what's going on and how crazy it is and how bad it is, there's this ultimate sovereignty happening. It doesn't really matter in the long run how the plan is fulfilled, as long as God's plan is fulfilled. Like, human beings are running around doing whatever they do. And we can talk about details in a second, but I mean, human beings are crazy, and they run around doing whatever, and they do bad stuff to each other, and they do stupid stuff. But it doesn't stop God's plan. His ultimate plan is going to be fulfilled. So, because we're in Genesis, and because we've been seeing all these fundamental lessons, lessons like, you know, obey, and you know, obey God, the lesson of Adam, or holiness, the lesson of Noah, or waiting on God, the lesson of Abraham, right? The big lessons. Isaac and Jacob's lesson in this chapter 27, the lesson might be the ultimate sovereignty of God. Now, it could also be other weird things that we can talk about, you know, like, you know, you can take a blessing. I'm baffled by the fact that the blessing can't be moved around or withdrawn or anything else. I don't know what that means. It's like God told Isaac, "You get one blessing, like a genie with a wish, you know, and now you used it." And that's it. And that's what it's like. And I'm baffled by that. I just don't understand. But here's what we do know. We do know that Esau can't be the one. And we know that for several reasons. First of all, There's no mention of Esau being with God or holy at all. Okay, he just doesn't care, first of all. Second of all, he doesn't really care about his birthright until later, until he's looking at, you know, a pile of cash or whatever from Isaac dying. He gives away his birthright for stew in the first place. He doesn't really care. And just like Cain and Abel, we see his heart, because God was talking to Cain because God could see his heart, and he had murder in his heart. And we've just found out that Esau has murder in his heart. So he has murder in his heart. He has very little concern for the connection with God. He has very little concern for the family in general. He doesn't get any of the history of the family. He doesn't go back and get a proper wife from a proper place. He does whatever he wants. Every single thing about him, we know, indicates to us that he can't be a continuation of the line. Jacob is acting crazy. Now, let me ask you this. Here's another possible lesson. And this one is a little more interesting and fun and sketchy. Okay. Now, we know that if you don't want to go rob a bank and kill somebody, right? But what about war? Well, you know, what about guys killing Nazis? So there's a question mark there, right? Let me explain what I mean. If somebody comes into your house and is going to rob and kill you and your family, and you kill them, is this a sin? Is this a bad thing? Are you a bad person? Most of the time, depending on your heart, but most of the time, probably not, right? But you did something bad. You killed this guy breaking into your house. You killed somebody. That's the worst thing you can do, right? Kill somebody. But he had grabbed your daughter to kidnap her. She's going to turn into one of those statistics. You've been on the range a lot, so you just shoot him in the face before you can get her out the door. Sounds to me like you're a hero, even though you just shot a guy in the face. Are you tracking what I'm trying to say? Sometimes the things that you do would technically be bad, unless there's a really good reason. You don't want to steal. You know, your life is a little tough. Go rob a bank is not the answer. But if you're starving on the street and a guy has a giant pile of apples and you have a kid who's starving and one of the apples falls off the pile and rolls down the alley toward you and you take the apple and give it to your kid, are you really a thief? Are you really a bad person? Now, you stole an apple from that guy. You see what I mean? The entire world of these problems has a gray area. And what I'm trying to say is, somebody in this group may be close enough to God to know that no matter what it takes, Jacob has to be in charge. It's sort of like, if let's say that Rebecca knows that if Esau becomes in charge, God's plan's over. So what's more important? Him being slightly older and Isaac liking him, or Jesus? You get it? The future of God's ultimate plan. Rebecca has been spoken to by God. She may have a connection to God, and she may know. So there's a chance that even though they did this dicey thing, lie to the guy, get the guy to do whatever, that doesn't really matter. Because they're doing the right thing. Maybe the wrong way, but they're doing the right thing. Maybe there isn't any other way. Maybe if everybody is honest, Esau wins. and the whole plan ends, because the next generation comes from random Hittite girls. And there is no 12 tribes of Israel, and there is no Jacob, and there is no Moses, and the party's over. See, God sees the big picture. When we read the specific story of what happened, oh, let's put some goat skin on you. You know, it's really shady, and you know. But God, but the big picture, it doesn't matter. The plan of God and what has to happen in this lineage is all that matters. We have got, Adam has fallen, the earth is gone, everything is totally destroyed. Everyone is dead unless we get to Jesus. And who cares if somebody tapes goat skin into their neck to get us to Jesus? You understand? So that could also be a lesson. Now, I don't know, you know, that has implications in our daily lives that are kind of dicey, right? I don't know. I don't know the full implication of that. Somebody may be getting informed, but God is certainly in charge of the whole thing. There's bigger picture stuff. I'll give you an example. All the things that could go wrong are things that God's in charge of, right? So, what is God in charge of in this picture? Assuming that Rebecca and Jacob and Esau are all, and Isaac are all under free will right now, which they're not, but let's assume they're all operating out of free will. What's God in charge of? Jacob's eyesight, Isaac's eyesight is God, right? The fact that they have goats is God. The fact that he doesn't get back before they finish cooking up goats is God. Maybe he tripped. Maybe he was stuck in a muddy side of a creek for a second. All that's God. So God's in charge. He hears the voice. He's making a decision. Isaac. Now Isaac's in direct communication with God. He's the son of Abraham. He's the son of promise. He's the one that's connected to God, right? So why doesn't he decide not to do it? Why doesn't he decide to wait? He could have said, I don't trust this situation. I'm going to wait. Or he could have said, let me check your foot real quick. Right? He's not stupid. But none of that occurs to him. It doesn't occur to him to check a foot or a back. It doesn't occur to him that this tastes a little too much like Rebecca's stew, not so much Esau's. It doesn't occur to him that he can just wait a minute. Like, just give me a day to think about it, because I'm not really sure you're actually Esau. All the ideas and the functionality of all of his decision making is in God's hands. So there's a vast sovereignty in this story. We see these people, they appear to be exercising free will, they appear to be doing dicey, shady stuff, and yet it's exactly what has to happen, and all the things that could go wrong don't. Furthermore, I think that we have an ultimate answer in the blessing itself. The ultimate answer to this question, I believe, is in this blessing and how it can't be redone. It can't be taken back. Esau is begging multiple times for another blessing, or the blessing to be taken back, or whatever. It doesn't occur to Isaac that he can do that, or that doesn't appear to be to Isaac an answer. Why doesn't that appear to be an answer to Isaac? And we don't know from the text explicitly why Isaac doesn't just go. Remember, Abraham argued with God about the 12 people or the 5 people or the 2 people or whatever. Abraham argued with God. Why doesn't Isaac say, Lord, I made a mistake. I accidentally blessed the wrong guy. You're the one that's the source of the blessing. Therefore, let's slide that thing over to Esau. Why does he not perceive of that as a possibility? And I would say that that's because of God. That God is at work in Isaac, even though Isaac is an old guy and he's blind and he really likes stew and he likes Esau more than Jacob. He's also the guy. He's God's guy. He's the guy. And that means God is at work in his life. And God has been blessing him the whole time. If I were going to guess, I would say that God has been speaking to Isaac, either to his heart or to his mind or openly. But I would say God's been speaking to Isaac and saying, you're going to bless your child. And so he's setting up the blessing for Jacob, telling Isaac, you have a blessing to give. You need to figure out who you're going to do this with. And he gives Isaac the choice, and Isaac's going to make the wrong one, but that's not going to matter because God knows that's not going to matter. So the way it's set up in his heart with God, he gives this blessing, and he has this realization that that's it. And then Esau comes in, hey, I brought the game. And he said, I'm sorry. I can't do anything about it. And that's God. That's the realization of Isaac that what God wanted to happen has happened. We don't have explicit evidence of that in the text, that he says, God has said this. But we have this echo blessing where he's trying to give Esau everything he can. And what does that look like? Your dwelling shall be of the fatness of the earth. So you're going to live happy, fat and happy. You're going to have dew of heaven from above. So you're going to be blessed. You're going to have a great life. But by your sword you shall live. You shall serve your brother. And it shall come to pass when you become reckless that you shall break his yoke from your neck. Now, I read that as prophecy. It shall come to pass when you become reckless, you shall break his yoke from your neck. If that's prophetic, if that's a prophetic word, then God is speaking directly to him. God is speaking directly to Isaac and saying, that's it. He's got the blessing. Here's what's going to happen to him. Here's your word of knowledge. Here's your word of prophecy. Your dwelling's going to be good. You're going to be blessed, but you're going to live by your sword. You're going to serve your brother. Eventually, you're going to become restless. You're going to break his yoke from your neck. That, if that's a word of prophecy from God, then we know that that means that God is dealing directly with Isaac and with his heart and his mind. And he's basically said to him, this is how I want it. This is what's going to happen. You can see it right now prophetically. You've already given this to Isaac. You see that unfolding prophetically. And now you're going to give this to Esau. I mean, you've already given this to Jacob. Now you're going to give this to Esau. You're going to see it unfold prophetically. And it's locked. I think that's why it's locked. The reason I think that they don't just go psych and change it is because God is in it. And Isaac is the closest to God, and God is fully in this deal. So Isaac's realizing, even though it's unfolding in a weird way, Isaac is realizing it's God. Bless you. And I think that would be the answer, because the way that it's a blessing, the way it's dealt with is something you can't take back, and the way he has a prophetic word for Esau. I think we're being given theological reasons, textually, to believe that God is right there. He's right there on top of this situation. And as it unfolds, Isaac's like, and God's like, nope, this is it. And he's like, okay, and now what? And he's like, this is now what? And he gives Esau the word. Esau is known, his heart is known to God. And God knows he has murder in his heart, and God knows it's not going to work the way anybody wants it to if he takes over. And immediately he goes, Esau goes to this, I'll just kill him. Esau makes himself feel better. He comforts himself with the thoughts of killing his brother. You understand? That's a heart statement. It's not like he needs his blessing and he has to have this stuff so he's going to kill his brother. It's a logical reason. It's not logical. He comforts himself with the idea of killing his brother. So this is a happy, comforting thought to him. So this is what, how we are seeing his heart. And we see Esau's heart is dark and there's a murder in it.
If he had killed Jacob, would he then get the blessing?
Yeah, see, I don't even think that would work. I think that's a great question. I think if he goes right over there right now mad, rushes out of the tent and stabs Jacob in the face, it's not going to matter. He's going to go back in the tent and say, hey, I killed him, now it's all mine. And Isaac, with God right there, is going to go, no. And he's going to give him the same exact thing, the word he would have given him. You're not going to, maybe it'll be twisted slightly, you're not going to serve your brother, but you should have, and now you're going to live by the sword, and now you're going to die by the sword, and you're not going to get the full blessing. This is not happening. And of course, that would have caused a whole lot of trouble, right? Because how are we going to get to Jesus if that happens? And so he doesn't rush out and kill him immediately. Why? God. That's why. So God's ultimately in charge of everything that's happening. It's really a story of intense, intense sovereignty, where the details are all being sorted out. But once again, and I love it, just love it when like some conservative fundamentalist guys are talking about, you know, how women aren't a big deal and how women are subsidiary and not important and everything else. Because over and over again, God uses women to run everything. Over and over and over again. There's no Joshua taking Jericho without women. There's no continuation of any of this line without women. Rebecca's the one in charge of this deal. I mean, women are such a vital and important part of everything. The guys get to be like the leader and have the stuff and be talked about like that. Meanwhile, the women actually run and stuff. And to me, it's fascinating how God uses men and women and how they work together. And then Rebecca, you know, in her genius is like, I'm weary in my life because of the daughters of Heth, these two chicks that Esau married. They're wearing me out, you know, like borrowing my like yarn all the time.
Why did she bring them up?
Or whatever. Because that's the way out. If Jacob takes a wife from the daughters of Heth, like those who are here in this land, or anybody from this land, what good will my life be? In other words, I've got these two girls here with Esau that are driving me to drink right now, okay? They're working my nerves. If more of them get in the mix, I'm just going to kill myself. We've got to get Jacob to go back home and get a real wife from our actual relatives and make it right. That's her excuse. It's also the way God needs it to be. But it's her excuse to get Jacob out of there. Now Jacob will travel all the way back just like that servant did from Abraham, because they're still living in the same place Abraham lived in. Now they're going all the way back again. This time, Jacob will be on a long journey. This time he'll be far away from Esau, so he won't be in danger. And it'll accomplish the continuation of that line. Now on a crazy like midnight ancient aliens note, there has got to be something going on with the genetics of this line. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's some kind of empowerment or height or physical attractiveness or intelligence. I don't know what it is. But there's got to be something going on, because we continue to go back to that well to keep the people together. And those people continue to be described as exceptional. Powerful leaders, people that kings fear, women that everybody's trying to get with. I mean, there's something about this line, and I believe it's the line of Seth. I believe it's Eden genetics. I don't know what it looks like, but I believe that it's Eden genetics, that because Adam and Eve were created originally to be immortal and perfect, that everything about them was perfect. And then they screwed it up, and they had to go out in the world. But they had a kid and two people that were originally immortal, perfect people had a kid named Seth, and his kids went down to Noah, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then the Noah line gets sidetracked with some of his kids, but the other kids keep it in the family, so to speak, and they keep traveling that direction. There's something about it. I'm dying to know, and I'll die and I'll know. Okay? I'll find out later. I'll meet him and I'll be like, oh, wow. So you're like 9 feet tall and glow. That is awesome. Now I get it. Or something like that. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is that makes them special. But why are they so worried about the women being jacked by these kings? A king or pharaoh has access to thousands and thousands of beautiful women. They have harems of beautiful women. If it happened one time, okay, maybe Sarah or Rebecca or something, maybe that would be an exceptional thing. But it's every time. We always have to say they're our sisters. We always get in trouble. And then the guys are being called in to make deals with kings and pharaohs as pacts so that they won't be harmed. The kings and the pharaohs won't be harmed. So something about their godliness is visible. I don't know what it is. I don't know if they look a little weird like Moses did when he came off the mountain, because they're dealing with God directly, so they have a glow about them. I don't know if their hair is of a different color, or their skin, or their height. I don't know if they just speak and that you can and people around them like hear and fear God when they see them. It's almost like there's angels around them. I don't know. I can't find any direct evidence of what's going on, but every single time there's this thing. And that's related to that blessing too. It's almost like there's a continuation of this line and it contains something magical. We know it contains the blessing of God, which is all you need. But there's some way that other people are seeing it or knowing it. Maybe it's in dreams. Maybe it's visibly. I don't have any idea. But it seems to me that there's something going on with that genetics in that line. Maybe it's just the blessing of God is visible on their face. I don't know what that looks like. But they're going to send Jacob out. And he's going to go away. And that's great. He's going to stay away from the daughters of Canaan. He's going to stay away from the Hittites. And, Esau's going to keep causing more trouble. He's going to marry more iffy chicks. Yep, he's going to keep going and keep causing more and more trouble. Hey.